Good evening, everyone. Today is the second. We're live, but just gonna turn on the video. Good evening, everyone. Broadcasting live. March 29th. So, this is an interesting quote. It's fairly specific, but it's talking about anger. Dayo me bhikkhave pungala santosam vinjamana lokasmin. There are these three people existing, found to be existing in the world. What three? Paspasarnale kuppamo, one who is like a scratch on a rock. Paspasarnale kuppamo. Pugalo. Paspasarnale kuppamo. Pugalo. Person who is like a carving in a rock. Leka. Means, well, it's actually where writing, the word for writing came from. It means a scratch. Second one, Pattavile Kupamo Pungalo. Person who is like, Upama means a comparison, or can be compared to a scratch in the earth, a line drawn in the earth. And the third one, Udakale Kupamo Pungalo. One who's like a carving in the water. Scratching, a scratch in the water. Writing in the water. Maybe lake just means writing, I can't remember. Let's see here. No, something like. Yeah, it can be either an inscription or writing. From lik, which is the root in regards to writing. So these three types of people. One type of person is like a writing in a rock. One type of person is like writing in earth. One type of person is like writing on water. Katamoja bhikkhave pasarnale kuppamo pungalo. And what sort of person is like writing in rock? Oh, someone is abhinhang kunjati, is angry constantly, always getting angry. And when they're angry, when they get angry, dighartang anusiti, they stay angry. Where the anger lasts for a long time, right? Yeah, the anger lasts for a long time. Just like a carving in the rock, it's not so soon worn away. And then another person is like, what is the person like writing on earth? They get angry often, abhinhang kunjati. But their anger doesn't last for long. So just like you can write on earth, you can leave a mark, but the mark fades away quickly. Not like rock. After a good rain. So this sort of person, people get angry. This is a sort of your average person. Someone who gets angry and stays angry, well, they've got a problem. Person who's not able to let go of their anger. That's a big problem. People who get angry are just ordinary people. They can actually be good people. Good people can get angry. It's not a good thing, but they can otherwise be good. It's a question of how they deal with the anger. Do they take it out on others? Do they let it stew and try to find ways to express their anger through unwholesome deeds? Or do they let go of it? Do they see the anger for what it is? And this goes with all of the defilements. It's important because when we meditate, these emotions are going to come up. We're training. This is why we call it practice. It's not perfect. So when you practice, sometimes you fail. And quite often we fail in terms of seeing things clearly. As a result, we get angry, or we want something, greedy, attached to something, or we're worried, or we're conceited, or we're self-righteous, or any number of things come up. The question is what we do then. Are we able to be mindful of those things? So the best is if you can catch the experience before the anger even comes up, or greed, or delusion. But once it does come up, it's still possible to salvage the situation by letting go of it. Saying angry, or wanting, or thinking, or so on. And then there's the third type of person, like the water. This is totally different. You can't write on water. It's kind of funny to think, but why it's funny to think of writing on water is because you can't do it. The Buddha uses this sort of simile often. He talks about someone who tries to attack water, tries to attack it, or tries to splash the water around and destroy the ocean, kind of thing. We should be like water. Water is never, you can't write in water. You can't affect the water substantially. You can't leave your mark. No matter what happens to them. Ide kacho pungalo agalhin api uchamano. When they're spoken to roughly, parusen api uchamano. When they're spoken to unkindly, amana pen api uchamano. They're spoken to with words that are detestful, words that are not pleasant. But they stay sandhyat, whatever that means, sandhyating. Should mean when they're, My Pali's not good enough. Here we are, etched. a line etched in water, remains on friendly terms, mingles and greets him. Sandiyat ding eva sang san dat ding eva samodati meva. Samodati means it's agreeable, it's friendly. I don't think he's got this in the right order. Sandiyat ding means continues to stay with that person. Doesn't have any sort of, have any grudge when people are mean to them, when people do and say things. What this made me think of, today I taught meditation throughout the day, well, till about 3:30. And two people, actually more than two, I got a bunch of skeptics. I think everyone's thinking too much because of exams coming up or something. But one of them was really bad. People take the easy way out of an argument. But it's called the eel wrigglers. In the Buddhist time, they called them like people who wriggle like an eel. I think it's the kind of sort of what we call it today, the moral relativist, for example. Someone who refuses to take a stand and says there is no absolute, no absolute truth. And so whatever I said to this guy, he said, well, maybe to someone it's like this. I said, you know, so we're talking about fear. He said, well, fear can be useful. And I said, well, you know, I disagree. I think, you know, you don't need fear to do this or that. There's nothing that you need fear for. But then I said, well, what about, let's talk about irrational fear. Like, suppose you see a mouse and you get afraid of the mouse. And he said, well, the mouse could jump. He actually, I think, has some mental problems. Like, he was laughing a bit maniacally and talking very quickly and or maybe he was on drugs, I don't know. but he said, well, the mouse could jump up and bite you. But I mean, it was a ridiculous conversation. In the end, I said something that I think is a good point that has to be made. But I'll mention that. But why I bring it up is this idea that, well, actually, no, it does tie in with my point. I pinned him down, and he tried to respond. I said, no, you stop. You don't talk. You let me talk. And I said, no. And he tried to talk. I said, no. Let me finish. And I said, if you're going to learn meditation, if you're going to sit here and we're going to progress, you have to agree. There are certain things we have to agree on. If you don't agree with me on these things, then I can't help you. And so what we have to agree on is that there are certain things that we could do without, certain things that we would be better off without. And he said, well, you want to hear my take on that? I said, no. And I said, you either agree with me or you don't. And he said, well, I don't agree with you. Well, I don't. And I said, okay. And he left, and that was that. Why this made me think of that is, you know, this is something, this idea of getting angry. I mean, it shows a progression here of three types of people, and there's an obvious implication here, is that anger is not a good thing. And we should strive to be like a person. I mean, I think the Buddha was sort of exceptional in just laying these out. And he often did this. He didn't so often say, you know, here's a person who is angry and that's bad, don't be that person kind of thing. He didn't so often talk like that because he wanted to lay things out as in terms of reality, you know, to say there are these three types of person. But, you know, why is he teaching this if just to lay them out and say, okay, yeah, all three of these are equal, or and there's no, let's not have any judgment about them. The way he lays it out is quite beautiful, and anyone who looks at this, the idea is that it resonates with you. Just by reading it, you resonate and you incline towards the person who's like writing on water, because we're familiar with these. And it is innately unpleasant to us. It's discordant for someone to be often angry, and moreover to hold on to anger long. Anger is inherently bad. This is the point. If you don't agree with that, and it's, you know, it's such an easy thing to just disagree and say, well, you know, maybe there's something good about it. This guy took it to the extreme where there's this idea that you see a mouse and maybe it would jump on you. And I'm like, really? Are we really going to go there? And I was just trying to point out that we can act irrationally, and he wouldn't even accept that. Well, maybe it's rational to them, that kind of thing. I mean, this is really a proper stance you can take, but it does sort of exemplify the idea of things like moral relativism, where, you know, everything is relative. There's nothing really good or bad. But I think there's some truth to it in the sense that everything is just things. But our minds don't work that way. Our minds do have an intrinsic compass. And so when you read this, you don't have to be told you'd better be the person without anger. You know, the Buddha lays it out just so beautifully that you can read it and get the impression. And you think, yeah, I don't want to be that person who is like a scratch on rock. I don't want to be the person who holds on to anger. I don't even want to be the person who gets angry. You think of this person who is, you know, when someone speaks harshly to them and then they're still friendly and kind to the person, wow, you know, that resonates. You don't have to say which one is better, we know. Unless we're, you know, this is the problem, is we've gotten so messed up and now we have this television shows. There's this one called, you know, everyone knows of it, I'm just hearing about it, called Game of Thrones. And apparently it's full of morally corrupt characters. And this is the kind of thing. And then there was another one, my brother, I also, you know, I'm not watching this, called Breaking Bad. And it's apparently about a guy, I mean, all of you know about this, I'm sure all of you probably watched it. It's about this guy who makes meth. And so apparently, you know, he's a good guy, and then my father explained it to me, over 7 seasons he breaks bad, he turns bad. And I don't know, I mean, they were arguing, saying, you know, it's actually not glorifying this, but my point being, I mean, I think all of this is indicative of some kind of, you know, I don't want to say lack of compass, because I think the compass is there. I think inherently in reality there is ethics. You know, ethics, reality is not atoms. Reality is experience, and it has an inherent ethic to it. We don't want to suffer. We can try to convince ourselves that we do want to, just for the sake of convincing ourselves, but you're just twisting yourself, tying yourself in knots. Anger is bad. You can pretend that it's good, and you can start to believe that it's good, and you'll just fall flat on your face, tying yourself in knots, until finally you get tired and you come back to square one where anger is bad. So you say anger is good, and then you try it out, and it ends up messing everything up for you. At the very least, we can say there are desires in the mind, and our desires conflict with their goals. They're inconsistent. So I want to beat someone up because that will make me happy. You know, you beat someone up and then you're not happy, right? I want to rob a bank so I can be rich and enjoy the money. You rob a bank, you won't enjoy the money, even if you get away with it. The world doesn't work that way. You end up just perverting your experience. And you become inconsistent. So you can say all you want, well, it's, you know, all things are equal, what does it matter? We don't think that way. You're full of desires, and your desires are conflicting, and your desires are inconsistent. You do something because you want to be happy, but it makes you unhappy. So you can say, well, that's fine, but no, it's really not. You're not, because you're not impartial. No, and your impartiality is, or your partiality is messing you up, because you're partial to things that are hurting you, partial to things that aren't fulfilling your wishes. Anyway, I just thought it was an opportunity to talk about this ridiculous, because you know it seems like a sound idea. Yeah. Why is there this moral absolutism or any kind of absolutism, absolute truth kind of thing? But you know, finding all it is, I would say, it's intellectual dishonesty to suddenly come out and say, "Oh, there is no truth." Well, anyone can say that. I mean, how hard is it to say, "I don't believe this, I don't believe that"? And so, this is the Buddha himself attacked this idea, you know, that you can't pin someone down. What do you believe? Oh, well, you know, what's there to believe? Right? I don't say this, I don't say that, and you know, I don't say anything, basically. And when anyone tries the hard work, tries to do the difficult thing, and find an answer, find the truth, right? I mean, it's like in this day and age, trying to find the truth is seen as naive, is seen as brainwashed or fanatic. You know, all the religions of the world claim to have truth. You know, obviously, none of them do, right? So they have all these ridiculous claims about God and heaven and so on that are unsubstantiated. And so that's kind of the backing as a result of all that. People have given up the search for the truth. And they've come upon this, what seems like a better idea because it works, it resonates. But what it resonates because it's just so easy. You don't have to believe anything. You know, eat, drink, and be merry. But it's easy. It's lazy, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Much harder to try and find the truth. Obviously, millions of orders of magnitude more difficult, because everyone tries to find the truth and fails. And so now it's like we're just giving up, which is just laziness. So we make the same claim. We claim to have found the truth, and not only the truth, but the noble truth. So we don't worry about all truths. We just worry about the truths that are important. And so we have these four noble truths. And that's basically what I was saying. If you don't agree that certain things are suffering, if you don't want to be free from suffering, if you don't understand this idea and it doesn't resonate with you, then I've got nothing to say. It's fine. You know, you want to talk about everything's okay? Well, sure, it's okay, but I have nothing to say to you. I mean, I guess I would even say even further is that you're all messed up if you don't understand this idea. But people don't. And then they say, well, what about wanting to be free from suffering? A lot of people are antagonistic. Not a lot of people, but I do get people who are kind of skeptic, I guess. Not antagonistic, just skeptic. Either because of their own religion, which conflicts with mine, or because they've given up a religion and therefore they're skeptical about all religions. That's why people don't like to call Buddhism religion, because they don't believe in religion. So I get asked that a lot. Actually, one of the questions today was, "Is Buddhism a religion?" Basically, I didn't answer it. I was saying, you know, is it really useful to talk about it? Maybe I was a little bit mean to him, but he was very argumentative. This was the second guy who was an ex-Sikh. But he still wears the turban, so I thought he was a Sikh, and he said, "Oh, I just wear it for my parents." I lost my train of thought. Enough. Anyway, that's about anger. It's been a long day. I taught meditation today, and just a 5-minute meditation. It's not too much. And then I went to a lecture on perspectives on peace and like the future of peace studies at McMaster. They didn't actually, I was thinking they might talk about peace studies in the future at McMaster, but they didn't really. I'm interested in peace studies. I mean, it's a broad topic. Obviously, I'm more interested in inner peace, but that's a valid part of it. You know, a lot of it has to do with things like war and conflict. But what we're dealing with in this class are three documents, basically. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission report, or executive summary, I think it's called. The Happiness Report, and the UN Resolution 70.1, or 70/1, depending on how you write it. So the TRC is about the First Nations people. I talked about that before. And it's interesting as a Buddhist, you know, how do we relate to this? Because I mean, land claims and culture and self-governance and all these things are not really of interest. But there's so much more to the situation in Canada. I mean, we're living on a legacy of not only apartheid, but cultural genocide is what the TRC calls it. And that may not sound all that menacing, cultural genocide. Well, it's just culture, but it was really more than that. It was, I guess, genocide in general, because they, like today, she, Dr. Doubleday, the professor who gave the lecture, or the, whatever you call it, the talk, she mentioned a person, a man who had grown up in the residential schools, and then tried to go back to his community in the north, and they didn't recognize him, and nobody remembered him, but he kind of remembered some of the people in the community. But it didn't matter because they couldn't talk to each other. He didn't speak their language, let alone have any inkling of his own culture, because he'd grown up being told that his culture was wrong. And so here's a person who has no place in the world, doesn't know who he is, and has grown up, you know, abused, basically. It was child abuse for the most part. I don't know. I mean, I suppose they, in some cases, they argue it wasn't, but there was sexual abuse, child abuse, and it just is child abuse to take people away, to take kids away from their families and their culture. Anyway, so what we're dealing with in Canada is and what's most interesting to Buddhism is a lot of issues of, you know, mental health, suffering, and suffering in many levels. So that's interesting. It is interesting. It's not immediately something I would focus on, but I'm interested in it, especially in terms of accepting and recognizing the suffering of these people, and doing what we can to set it to move towards some kind of amelioration of their situation. I've got an exam on Thursday on this, so it is highly on my mind. Day after tomorrow, an exam. And the second one is the Happiness Report, which was put together was commissioned, or it was started by the king, I think, of Bhutan. Anyway, Bhutan was involved with this. But the Happiness Report is interesting. It talks about what leads to happiness. And they identify six factors. There is, the first one is economy, and economics is, a country's wealth is actually a good indicator of happiness, apparently. You know, which romantically we don't want to think of that. Money is not the cause of happiness, but you know, abject poverty and a country that has a low GDP per capita Because apparently, I mean, abject poverty causes a lot of suffering. It's hard to be happy and at peace when your basic needs aren't being met. But another interesting part of that is this idea of equality. Because in Canada, there are a lot of happy people, and so Canada ranks fairly high on happiness in the world. But one point our professor made is that, you know, not everyone is happy. So you've got happy people, but then you've got the indigenous peoples of Canada suffering terribly. In Buddhism, that's interesting from the point of view of karma. So we don't think of peoples as peoples. We're all just people, and we're all just beings. So we take turns. I probably haven't been, I haven't been white my whole life. I was probably Asian. That's why I got such a connection with Asia. But we switch. And so the first one now will be later be last. We might be on top now, but if we crush those underneath us, guess where we're going in the next life? I mean, it makes sense. It's logical that it's probably happened like that. Not exactly. It's very complicated, but there's that kind of trend. And so the idea of equality may be, from a Buddhist point of view, I mean, like all issues, it's only going to happen when we start acting with equality. We start basing our actions on helping other people, which I guess is the point, yeah. Anyway, so you've got GDP, and then you've got healthy life expectancy, social support, trust. If there's trust in a society, trust of the government, when the government is corrupt and so on, that has an effect on happiness. And then perceived freedom and generosity. Number six is generosity. I think it's number six because it's the least important, which is odd. I'm not really, probably have to do more studying to really understand these six, but I've been a bit busy. But you know, the idea of a happiness report, the whole point of it is to look at progress in the world and development in a different way, to not look at it in terms of simply money, look at it in terms of happiness. Look at put the people first instead of the state. You know, is a state doing well? Is our state rich and so on? It's not so important as are the people happy. And so that's the idea of the happiness report, is to change the way we look at progress and to focus more on happiness, which is, you know, very Buddhist. Bhutan is a Buddhist country, so he's got the same sort of ideas as we do. The third one we're looking at is the UN Resolution 70/1, which is based on the Millennium Goals. It's now these 2030 goals, that by the year 2030 we should have ended poverty, and we should have ended, you know, climate change, ended our... We should have solved, and at this point it's probably too late to solve, but we should have done what we can by 2030 to get things back on track. And so our prof is raving about this. She's really an exceptional person who had done so much. She's got a PhD and a Bachelor of Education and a law degree. And she's been just about everything, done a lot of work with the UN and stuff. So I'm really keen to have the potential to work with her in the future. It was a really good talk. You know, she really understands the issues, and she's worked so much. So it's neat to be able to work with her. So anyway, this resolution is in regards to sustainable development. So trying to figure out what is required for the human race to sustain itself. And you know, that's not that interesting from a Buddhist perspective, because you know, it's short-sighted. Eventually the human race is going to go up in a ball of flames. But the factors that lead to sustainable, or contribute to sustainable development, are interesting. I mean, they have these six principles, six P's, five P's, five P's. People, planet, peace. No, people, planet, prosperity, peace, and the planet, and partnership. Sorry. So people, putting people first, and this is in regards to poverty. The planet, that's in regards to climate change. Prosperity is in regards to economics. Number four is peace, and peace is important. Of course, we're in peace studies, so we talk about it especially. But there's a quote in the resolution, I think, that says, yeah, it says sustainable development is not possible without peace. Depends on peace. And peace depends on sustainable development. So they stress that quote, that they work together. And she said this was pretty awesome, because apparently it's the first time they've used this sort of language where they've really focused on the idea of peace. The language is new to the UN, apparently. Something about how, you know, normally they don't concern themselves so much about peace. So to include that was apparently significant. And then the fifth one is partnership. Partnership is interesting, working with not just governments working together, but all peoples on all levels. I mean, you could include religion in there, but NGOs and just individuals who have a stake in things, grassroots organizations, that kind of thing. Yeah, so maybe that's not that. I mean, it's not all what I would want to focus on as a Buddhist, but you know, in general, talking about peace, I think, is quite useful. But as you can see, it's a little bit worldly. But it's worldly in terms of the big things, you know, what affects people, how people find happiness. And so talking about these things is interesting. Learning about these things is somehow useful. As I said, I'm obviously more focused on the mental health and inner peace, of course. But that's what I'm studying. And then I've got my Lotus Sutra essay, which is almost done. I'm just going to write the conclusion. And that's due tomorrow, but there's an extension, so we have to work on it till Friday. Anyway, so I've opened the hangout up. Nobody joined, so I'm assuming there are no questions. I think we'll stop it there. And we'll have to see how the next days go. Probably tomorrow I'm just not going to broadcast in preparation for my exam. Okay. So I guess that's all for tonight. Have a good night.